Welcome to Because the Beatles, the podcast about the Beatles, everything about the Beatles 24/8. I'm Allison.
And I'm Erica. And before we start, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, or stream us on Spotify. And if you're enjoying BC the Beatles, feel free to leave us a preferably five-star review so other Beatlemaniacs can find us.
Also, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter/X, and TikTok. We'll be posting videos, photos, and more from this episode and beyond. And remember, you can always email us at bcthebeatles@gmail.com. Hello, Erica.
Hello.
Here we are again.
I know, another busy week in the Beatles world.
It's unreal how busy these guys keep us.
It keeps on going. And the first thing we need to talk about is, of course, the new Lennon-McCartney song.
Crazy. Yes.
I know.
Even crazier, that's not John and Paul, right?
I know. This is the first collaboration, I guess, between Sean Lennon and James McCartney. And really, it should be McCartney-Lennon, I think, because this is James's songs. James is leading off. He released it. So James is getting the thing that Paul kind of wanted a lot in the early 2000s, is the McCartney-Lennon name.
That's what I totally thought about the first when I first heard about it. I'm like, oh, it's McCartney-Lennon. It should be anyway.
It should be. Right now, I didn't see that anywhere. They just kind of list them individually. They're not addressing that. They already know it's a minefield and they're not addressing it, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing. Although I don't think Sean or James would probably have, you know, it wouldn't stick in their craw the way it did for their dads. I'm just going to guess. Like, I could be wrong about that.
I don't think either of them would care. But
yeah,
Paul is still very much a presence. So
we all know Paul cares deeply.
Paul probably cares. James announced this on his Instagram next to a photo of him and Sean together. The photo is actually not recent. It's been around for like 4 years, I think. Along with the photo, he wrote, "Primrose Hill is here. Today, I'm so very excited to share my latest song co-written by my good friend at Sean Onolennon. With the release of this song, it feels like we're really getting the ball rolling, and I am so excited to continue to share music with you." Now, an earlier post about this song read, quote, "I had a vision as a child in Scotland on what was a lovely summer's day. Letting go, I saw my true love and savior in my mind's eye. Primrose Hill is about getting the ball rolling with me and finding this person."
Hmm.
That's all we really know about it. There wasn't a lot of lead up to it. There was no indication, oh, James is coming out with an album. The only thing that might have given us a clue that there was some music coming was that he did release another song called Beautiful 2 months ago. I don't know if he's dripping out the contents of an album or if there's just a couple of songs, but this is the second one that he's done since 2016, actually, was the last time he released anything.
Yeah.
I don't think there was any indication before the announcement either that he was collaborating. I don't believe he has before. He certainly hasn't collaborated with Sean or any other member of the Beatles second generation community before. I thought it was interesting with these two posts that previewed the song was that both of them contained the phrase, "We're getting the ball rolling." I'm convinced that the next song or the album is going to be called "Getting the Ball Rolling" at this point.
That is really funny. I mean, I will say I do think we're used to Paul being a little cryptic, you know, like I feel like that's shit Paul would pull. Like, I just remember all the Egypt Station stuff that we talked about in our very first episode, you know, with Percy Thrillington and that kind of thing. So I don't know. Maybe James is just sort of like that's one of his catchphrases. We all have those that we overuse. I do see what you're talking about. And I see where it's coming from. It's coming from the elder McCartney and his little tricks that he likes to play.
Yeah, all that stuff with New and McCartney 3, like every album he does something. I don't know. James is probably more pure in that way than Paul is, so it's probably nothing. But we'll
I know. My thing is like, okay, so when he says with the release of the song, it feels like we're really getting the ball rolling. Okay, does that mean there's more coming from him and Sean? Or does that mean that there's more coming from just him? Like you said, like an album or maybe an EP. So I'm very curious. Yeah. What did you think of Primrose Hill, the song?
I thought it was really gorgeous. I didn't hear anything that was reminiscent of their fathers, which I liked. It's not derivative. I think that the Sean influence can be heard in that. I think most of James's songs are a little bit more simple and straightforward as far as the chord progression. And Sean is You know, he does a little bit more like psychedelic. He does ambient music. He does a lot more unexpected chord changes and musical themes. So I feel like Primrose Hill maybe had a little bit more of that than James's usual songs. But I thought both of them, Primrose Hill and Beautiful, were some of the best things that he's done ever.
Mm.
What did you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. That was the thing that stuck out to me too, was I was trying to pick out which, you know, what parts were maybe Sean or which parts were maybe James, and definitely the melody I felt was very Sean-like. And, you know, James talking about like what inspired the lyrics, and I could see that for him. And I gotta admit though, I'm an idiot. Like I right away was trying to pick out what would be John and Paul. And I'm like, that's not them, Allison. Come on. Like, this is not a Lennon McCartney. This is a McCartney Lennon. This is James and Sean. It's not John and Paul. I caught myself doing that, which, you know, I don't want to be somebody on like a music forum talking about this like it's John and Paul, because it's not. And I want to make that very clear to myself and to everybody that definitely trying not to make that comparison. But no, I like the song. I thought it was really pretty. Like I said, the melody was very Sean. Lyrics I felt were really James. And I'm guessing that might be the divide there. But, you know, obviously we're not sure.
We know nothing. We don't know if they work together in person or online. We don't know when it was written, who wrote what. We don't know if there's more to come. Like, we just don't know. And I'd love to know. I'd love to hear the two of them in an interview together talking about this.
Somebody get them on a podcast together.
Oh, hey, we have a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now that you mention it, we do have a podcast.
I love that idea.
Yeah, that would be really cool to like hear them talk about their process.
I want to hear about how they decided to do this, because there's been talk about the Beatles' sons, along with Danny and Zach, forming the next generation Beatles since the literal 70s.
And oh, my God. Yeah.
They have shot it down time and time again. They've always said that it's not happening. And all of a sudden, this thing comes out of nowhere.
And, you know, they have to realize how loaded it is, because it's like everybody's going to have an opinion. Everybody's going to speculate. And like you said, it immediately conjures up this like Beatles 2.0 group of guys.
I wonder if Danny and Zach knew about this, and if they didn't and they started hearing this and they're like, oh, shit. Oh, but shit.
God damn it.
Never going to leave us alone about this now. Why did they go and do this?
I know. God damn it, Sean and James. What the hell?
I hope there's more to come from them.
Yeah, I do too. I think that would be really cool. I hope that's not all we're going to hear from the two of them.
Yeah, I mean, Sean has had a pretty prolific career. He just won an Oscar like 2 weeks ago. Like, he does a lot.
I know.
But James is kind of in and out of the public eye. And I think he's a very good musician. He might be the best singer out of all of the Beatles' offspring. He's got a lovely voice. And with and without Sean, he's a good songwriter.
Yeah.
Coming from me, this isn't an insult. But the song really reminded me of like, it had those vibes of like something that would be on the soundtrack to like a CW show, like Dawson's Creek or like Felicity.
Oh, that's actually, yeah. Now that you mention that, totally. And that is such a great call. I think that's a compliment. Put that shit on TV.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, very excited. Yeah. Go out, listen to this stuff. I'm sure that if you're a Beatles fan, you've seen it. Paul has posted about it. Sean has posted about it. James has posted about it. And speaking of Paul, did you see him this week? See him this week hanging out with Snoop?
With Snoop. Yes,
so
I sure
cute.
Did.
Cutest thing
I
ever.
Loved that. It's like, oh my God, it's like take your dad to work day. I love it. And I didn't, full disclaimer, I live in LA. I did not go to the Jimmy Buffett tribute. It was one of my best friend's birthdays that night. So I couldn't go. And to be fair, I am not a Jimmy Buffett fan. I don't really know his music. I know, of course, Margaritaville. And I have friends who are parrot heads, but I just had no interest. Even Paul couldn't get me there. But I, you know, of course, we all saw the footage of Paul with his little margarita on stage. Did you see that? His margarita, yes. Although I swear to God, that was orange juice. I'm just saying, I don't think it was actually... Maybe it was, I don't know. I'm very torn on whether that was really a margarita or a macarita. But wait, now that I'm thinking about this, doesn't Paul put orange juice in his macarita? I don't know if it's like an orange liqueur.
Maybe it's Cointreau or something.
Yeah, I was thinking Cointreau too. We have the technology. I'm just going to look it up here while we're recording. And I found it under Mary's recipes, Dad's Clementine Margarita. Okay, the picture does look like what he was drinking. Okay, so yes, it is 1.5 limes juiced, 1 juiced, half for the glass rim, sea salt for the rim. I don't know why they lead off with that, but okay. 3 shots of any good Blanco tequila, like Patron Silver, Cointreau, 1 shot triple sec, and then 2 clementines. Okay, so that might be what gives it the color. So maybe that was a Margarita that he was drinking and not just orange juice.
He just had to bartend it himself. He's like, I know how to do this. Let me in.
Oh, I guarantee he did that. I guarantee he was back there making Margaritas.
I'm going to say this now. I know I will regret it, but if we ever go back on Blotto Beatles, I'm going to make a Margarita.
Oh my God. That's a good idea, though. I would definitely drink that over the booze that I can no longer drink because of Blotto Beatles. Look at it, you spice rum.
The one time I'm going to try a drink that powerful is for Blotto.
Yeah, that is a margarita that packs the punch, for real. Paul doesn't fuck around.
No, he did not. And he was so cute on stage and such a dork. And I love it.
It looked like a fun time. And I was hoping, I'm like, if Paul sings Margaritaville, that would make me a little sad I didn't go. But that's the good thing about everything. You know, this weekend is Coachella too. And it's like, everybody posts all this shit, you know, mm-hmm. They post all the performances. So it's like, I don't even feel like you have to be there anymore. The Hollywood Bowl is wonderful. I love the bowl so much, but unless you're like right up in front of the stage and seeing all this right in front of you, it's like, it's just like watching it on TikTok or whatever.
Right. It's so big.
Yeah. So yeah, no, but I am obsessed with Paul on stage with his Margarita. Okay. Well, let's get into our feature today, and very excited to switch gears a little bit. I feel like we haven't had a good John show in a while. So this is exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very exciting to talk about John. And this kind of springs out of something that's been going on recently online. His social media accounts have been sort of resurrecting this idea of the fictional land of Newtopia. And it's in conjunction with the buzz around the new Mind Games box sets that are coming out. There's a new website, citizenofnewtopia.com, that was launched a few weeks ago. And, you know, you can go there and you can declare yourself a citizen of Newtopia, which we'll talk about, because you can just do that with Newtopia. You don't have to do anything special. You can just say, I am a citizen of Newtopia. And it is so.
I have already done it.
I have too. We'll have to post our Newtopia citizenship cards on social. Absolutely. And, you know, this is kind of the second launch of Newtopia. In 2006, there's also a little bit of a Newtopian movement in conjunction with the release of the U.S. versus John Lennon documentary. So it's nice to see you come back, even if it, you know, stemming from the Mind Games hype. You know, it's funny. I was thinking, I'm like, how familiar are people with the term Newtopia? It's sort of one of those like sort of hidden gems of John's where you sort of, I know for years I sort of heard it mentioned and I'm like, okay, whatever. And then I was like, wait, what actually is that? And, you know, there's notoriously the track at the end of the first side of Mind Games album, which is 4 seconds long and is silent. And it's called the Newtopian International Anthem.
I love that.
Which is just basically John trolling. Yeah.
Yep.
Total troll. And as John and Yoko bandied about the idea of Newtopia, it was sort of less of a fantasy concept and more about a statement about John and Yoko's ongoing immigration issues. It was kind of like a satirical sort of playful way to like give the middle finger, you know, to the powers that be in the US. So today we're going to talk about Newtopia and what that is, but also go into John's legal issues with his deportation, his immigration issues, which is a minefield. I feel like I've read so many immigration cases now, and there are some long stretching ramifications of John's legal cases, which his lawyer, Leon Wilds, who we'll talk a little bit about, fascinating, fascinating guy. But he later took what he learned on John's immigration case after he sued the federal government 4 times and sort of applied that later on to some of the Obama administration's laws around deportation and immigration and that kind of thing. So it's really interesting to see what a big impact John's situation had for decades. And it kind of starts with Newtopia.
I love that because I think there's a prevailing idea that John and Yoko's political activism didn't do anything, but it did.
Right.
And it just did it so much later.
And nobody really talks about that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, a lot of the things that they sort of hung their hat on went unanswered. We'll talk about a couple of things that didn't, but they're sort of more esoteric ideas of like give peace a chance and the bed-ins and stuff, which, you know, you can't really quantify what that might have produced. But things like this, where this fantastic immigration lawyer, what he sort of learned and applied in this case, really did affect real people further down the line. I think that's just so fascinating because you don't think about that in terms of John's immigration struggles. Let's go into a little bit about Newtopia. So the first time this was really established, John Yonko put out a press release on April 1st, 1973. And a lot of people are like, oh, haha, April Fool's Day, April Fool's Day. And I don't know if that was their intention. I don't think so. But the next day, they held a press conference at the Association of the Bar of the City of New York. That's such passive phrasing. It makes me crazy. and they announced this conceptual country, quote unquote, called Newtopia. So the media members that were there were invited to ask Lennons about their ongoing immigration issues. And they also discussed the ongoing search for Yoko's daughter, Kyoko, which factors into all of the immigration issues. I didn't realize how much it did. And we will get to that in just a second. So Newtopia, you might be able to guess, but the name is a portmanteau of new and utopia. And so utopia, of course, refers to, you know, an idealized perfect place. And the word was first used in the book Utopia by Sir Thomas More in 1516. It literally translated from Latin means, quote unquote, no place.
Not to be confused with Family Guy's Peoria, when Peter Griffin decided to claim his own country a la Newtopia because he couldn't build a pool in his backyard.
Oh my God, I didn't even make that freaking connection. Oh, I forgot about Peoria. That is awesome. Do you think that was directly influenced from Newtopia?
The way that Peter Griffin described his Peoria was very similar to the principles of Newtopia. It's very possible. They got references from everywhere for that show.
They did. And speaking of the principles of Newtopia, here's what John sent the press conference. He read the press release that he and Yoko put out. And this is the declaration of Newtopia.
We announced the birth of a conceptual country, Newtopia. Citizenship of the country can be obtained by declaration of your awareness of Newtopia. Newtopia has no land, no boundaries, no passports, only people. Newtopia has no laws other than cosmic. All people of Newtopia are ambassadors of the country. As two ambassadors of Newtopia, we ask for diplomatic immunity and recognition in the United Nations for our country and its people.
Now it makes total sense why you can go to a website and register yourself as a citizen of Newtopia, because as long as you know about it, you are a citizen.
John further described his origins at the 1973 Now conference. He said, quote, it came out of Yoko's artwork, conceptual art, you know, where the idea is more important than the object. And this is something she had around for years. We were just waiting for the right time to bring it out and see the concept. It has no land. There's nothing to fight for. You know, there's no boundaries. There's no lines to be drawn. That's where I got Imagine from her, too. So, you know, well, I'm tripping off, but it's the opposite of what people think. I got probably more from her than she did from me.
Believe the man.
There's a definite through line through his work, which is also something that people say, you know, John's peace activism work is all over the place, but it all seems to have a really similar kernel of origin, which is Yoko's artwork and Yoko's philosophy.
Yeah, I was going to say not to get up on my Yoko soapbox, but he says it right here. That's where I got Imagine from her. Literally, he says that. Mm-hmm. And anybody who still bitches because she got partial songwriting credit on Imagine when she got added to that. Like, I can't. John says it a few times. Like, he fully admits, you know, that Yoko influenced him in all of that kind of stuff. And yet people get so up in arms over it. It makes me crazy. Rant over.
No, but I mean, rant away, because it's really, it's an important point and it's a true point. I mean, I don't know how many people see the in New York City, the 72nd Street subway train, the A line. It has this Yoko art, which is pictures of skies, and it says Imagine on it. And I believe it's in John's handwriting, but it's an installation that Yoko sponsored and Yoko put up. And I know that people say that she stole that idea from John, and it's not Yoko's artwork. It's her repurposing John, but it really is such a melding of the two, but it started with Yoko.
I mean, imagine the lyrics are just like Yoko's art. You can draw a direct line. Imagine there's no heaven. Don't think of it as a lyric. Think of it as a line of artwork, because that's what she was doing at the time. Yeah. That's what she's done her whole life. Look at her Twitter up until a few years ago. It was just like one-liners like that. Imagine there's no heaven. You know, that is just something she would say. To give John all that credit is just so insulting. And it just makes me insane.
And John himself never gave himself the credit. Just like he said at this Now conference, the idea is more important than the object, and I got it from her.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So just more evidence that backs that up. And there's never too much, because my God, you know, people just cannot accept it. And it's just maddening, maddening. Oh my gosh. Anyway, back to Newtopia. After that derivative little side note. So this press conference, I thought was really interesting, because John also read the Newtopian embassy's address, which was 1 White Street, New York, New York, 10012. And I looked it up immediately. And I was like, oh my God. I'm like, is this a real place? And is it just some like poor bastard's apartment? And then he started getting all this mail. But it was actually the apartment of some of their friends and staff, as well as the headquarters of the quote unquote National Committee of John and Yoko. God knows what that was. I mean, I imagine it had something to do with their, you know, immigration struggles, but thank God it wasn't some rando who started getting all this mail.
That would have been pretty funny, though.
Yeah, I know. Just being inundated with bags and bags of mail going to Newtopia. And they've been like, what the fuck is Newtopia?
Today, it is the location of a restaurant called 1 White Street in Tribeca, right next to, according to Google Maps, the Ghostbusters headquarters.
I saw that. What the hell? It's so weird. I wonder if in the many years since this press release has been out, if they've gotten a stray Newtopian letter.
They must have, and they've gotten more than one Beatles tourist, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. They should exploit it. Frankly.
Oh, they do. They do. Our address, this is from their website, our address, 1 White Street, is a footnote in the decades-long love story of one of rock music's most legendary couples.
Oh, shit.
They actually talk about Newtopia. They go on, in the 70s, it was the subject of a press conference in which, they say, a British musician facing immigration issues announced the creation of a conceptual country, one devoid of land or boundaries and welcome to everyone.
Wow. So they don't mention John and Yoko or Newtopia by name, but they talk about it?
No. And then they go on to say this idea of a place that is open to and accepting of all embodies the essence of hospitality. And though the country itself was merely a concept, its founding premise lives on.
Okay. Well, it's kind of weird they talk around it and not about it, but that's kind of cool that they are aware of the history of that building.
Yeah, definitely. And I like it that they kind of play off, at least they say they play off some of their menus on it.
What? We're going to have to go there. That's, I know. Just, this is it. Yeah.
When you're in New York, we need to go to 1 White Street.
We definitely have to check this out, see it for ourselves. And, you know, we could recommend to them that they fly the Newtopian flag, which is very simple. It is just a white flag, just a white flag. And John was asked during this press conference where they, you know, announced Newtopia what the flag meant. And he said, quote unquote, surrender and submission. And then pretended to blow his nose into it.
Lovely.
So that may have sounded really passive, which is not like John at all. But the surrender was meant to mean surrender to peace and love. You know, if there's nothing to fight for, then you can just surrender to the peace and love kind of thing, which, you know, I'm sure Ringo would be very, very down to do that and become a citizen of Newtopia. So there's a flag, but there's also a seal, which has a seal on it. Because John's humor.
Meaning the animal, right? The animal.
Yes. The seal, the arf arf. Yes. Marine creature. And it has the date of the country's creation, April 1st, 1973. And the seal is also balancing a yin yang on its nose. So much more creative than the flag.
But the Beatles already did that on the White Album. You can't be derivative.
That is true. So this declaration was also printed on the Mind Games inner sleeve. That was a big part of that release. So one more part. And you know what? This restaurant needs to adopt this part, because after John and Yoko moved into the Dakota later that year, side note, John would later move out to begin his 18-month lost weekend that September. So I thought it was interesting. It's not that long after his deportation scuffle and this press conference that he moved out. But anyway, so eventually they had a plaque installed with the words Newtopian Embassy engraved on it. And it hung outside their kitchen entrance to the apartment. And Yoko said that guests preferred to kind of enter that way as opposed to the front door. And she always said the Newtopian door was, quote unquote, the new front door. But that's not the Newtopian Embassy, Yoko.
No.
That's One White Street. So they definitely need that plaque, especially since, you know, Yoko has sold that apartment. Now, I wonder what happened to that plaque. Because it should go to its rightful owner, which is this restaurant.
Absolutely. With them proclaiming the lineage of a certain British musician on their website, they need to embrace it fully.
We can't confirm nor deny who that British musician is, I suppose, but just assuming that they are aware of Newtopia, they need that plaque.
Yes.
So let's go back and talk about why Newtopia was conceived. And unless you're an immigration lawyer, this is all very high level, and don't come for me if something's a little off, because it's a lot of legal jargon. It's really, really fascinating, all of John's immigration struggles, but it is very complicated. I can only imagine John trying to parse through all this stuff, because holy shit, it made my head spin. I'm glad he had a good legal team that sort of took it over for him. Pretty much from the start of John's bid to move to the U.S., he had tons of legal trouble. He sought permanent resident status because he and Yoko had been living in the U.S. since 1971. They arrived on August 31st of that year because they were seeking custody of Yoko's daughter, Kyoko, who was kind of missing, but they knew she was with her father, Tony Cox, and they thought she was in Texas, but they couldn't really pin her down. So that's why they had to physically come to the U.S. to sort of seek her out and try to get custody of her. So Yoko's status, interestingly enough, she was already a permanent resident. She became a permanent resident of the U.S. in 1964 through Tony Cox, through her marriage to him. He was an American. And also, you know, we forget Yoko went to college in the U.S. She kind of had lived here already a bunch of different things. Mm-hmm. So her residency was already kind of established. Immediately before the creation of Newtopia, John was threatened with deportation from the U.S. by the Nixon administration. There were two issues principally with John becoming a U.S. citizen. So one, he had had that 1968 marijuana possession conviction that he pled guilty to. And ironically, he did that because he didn't want Yoko to be deported from the U.K. So ironic. And the second issue was that the pair had really become associated with Abbie Hoffman and Jerry Rubin with the Yippie movement. That was only partially a cause of John's political involvement. He was also very openly anti-Nixon, anti-Vietnam. And you know, he did a lot of very public things, like Erica was talking about earlier, with varying results. But one thing that led to something directly happening because of it was a benefit concert on December 10th, 1971, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which was promoting the release of John Sinclair, who had been imprisoned on a really trumped up pot charge. And that was, he got 10 years for selling two joints. Absolutely crazy.
They gave him 10 for two.
10 for two. There we go. Yep.
I love that song.
It is a bop. John wrote a damn good protest song and made it really poppy and wonderful. And side note, RIP John Sinclair, he just died. He died on April 2nd. So we just lost him.
I'm sorry, that's the day that I think Newtopia was launched this year.
Oh my God, it was. That was the anniversary of Newtopia. Ironic.
Yeah.
Very ironic. Yeah, so the John Sinclair thing, that was a huge deal. And also, you know, they were appearing on a lot of talk shows, and their main stumping topic was the war and activism. And they were bringing on guests like Jerry Rubin and Bobby Seale, who is one of the Black Panthers, and all these quote unquote radicals. So they were really promoting a lot of really like threatening things to the Nixon administration. And then they started getting tapped, you know, their phones were tapped. They were put on FBI surveillance. To John's credit, or to his whatever, he sort of stopped associating with the more radical parties after he learned of the surveillance. which I think he was kind of freaked out about that. He talked about that pretty much for the rest of his life, mm-hmm. being under FBI surveillance, even though it only lasted like a matter of months. It wasn't that long.
I think once the president and the FBI tap your phone, you're going to be paranoid for the rest of your life.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's incredible how actually afraid of John Nixon was and his influence. You know, one fear was that John would turn the country against the idea of the Vietnam War and prevent Nixon from winning the 1972 election. That was a particularly pivotal election for a lot of reasons, but the main reason was that was the first year that 18-year-olds would get the right to vote under the 26th Amendment. You know, before that, I believe the age was 21. So yeah, the 18-year-olds, which if you think about it, who's listening to John Lennon? Who might buy into what he's saying? It's the young people.
Yeah, and who's getting draft notices? It's the 18-year-olds.
So exactly, you've got that perfect storm of this very influential pop star saying the war is bad, and Nixon becoming this sort of like bulldog figure for the war. It's like a cauldron of events that, you know, Nixon was really spooked by. And at that point too, John was planning a tour, and that totally was going to overshadow Nixon's own political stumping. And his tour was set to end in Miami at the same time as the Republican National Convention was going to be on. So it was really like just a confluence of really strange coincidences.
And Nixon, being so paranoid, must have thought that John planned that deliberately so that something could happen to stymie the Republican National Convention.
Yeah, he was super freaked out. Part of me is like, okay, yeah, that is a lot of coincidence, but I have to believe it was only coincidence. I don't think John would have intentionally done that.
I don't think so.
I don't think he would have followed his tour itinerary, you
know? No, and John is also, he was not an aggressive protester. Like, that's an aggressive move to be confrontational. He was much more about these concepts and demonstrations and art.
Yeah, it was more esoteric than it was practical in a lot of ways, for sure. And of course, we know that Nixon won the election in November 1972. And at that point, John's immigration status was he had an expired visitation visa. And so this visitation visa was basically a tourist visa while he helped Yoko find Kyoko. And after that expired, you know, Leon Wilds, who was their immigration attorney, got that extended for a month. So not that long, but enough to sort of like get the ball rolling further their immigration bid. On May 12, 1972, John applied to become a permanent resident of the U.S. And so to support his case, he had letters from artists, musicians, and even the mayor of New York at the time, John Lindsay, saying that he and Yoko would be valuable contributors to the U.S. and the creative society. And so this is all going down live in court. They're reading these letters. They're reading these words. And the INS didn't challenge that. They said, yeah, totally. But he also had this 1968 pot conviction, and they said that it made him a quote unquote excludable alien, which in law terms means, quote, any alien who has been convicted of a violation of any law or regulation relating to the illicit possession of marijuana. That's per the Immigration and Nationality Act.
Huh.
That was something they used to support this deportation charge going forward. But Leon Wilds, Len's lawyer over here, is saying, okay, yeah, he had that charge in the UK and he pleaded guilty to it, but he didn't actually possess narcotics. Like, he just had some pot, not a big deal. It's not enough to get the US all up in arms because he had this charge and it was in the UK. You know, it wasn't in the US. So it really shouldn't have counted anyway. Just a side note on Leon Wilds, he wrote an amazing book about his time representing John called, I believe it's John Lennon versus the U.S. It's a reverse of the documentary title. Yeah, it's really, really good. He was so smart. If you can watch some interviews with him on YouTube, he was just so fascinating to listen to. He was a best guest a few times. And I just remember going to his talks and just being bowled over by how smart and just so snappy his rationalization and his thoughts and stuff, where he was really, really the perfect person to represent John. And he himself died earlier this year. It's very sad.
Oh.
I know. We lost a really great immigration lawyer. And he would come with his son, Michael, who I believe is a lawyer too. Like, he followed in his dad's step. So that was really lovely to, you know, for the two of them to be there together. And yeah. And I recommend the book. It's so fascinating. And it's easy to read. It's not, you know, it's not a whole bunch of legal jargon. he just tells the story very well, and it makes it just so interesting. Okay, so we've got this court case that happened where John is trying to become a permanent resident. However, on March 28th, 1973, John was ordered to leave the U.S. within 60 days. His permanent resident application was denied, and they were like, you got to go. So, of course, you know, a couple of days later, we've got the Newtopian announcement of the creation of this conceptual country. And at that press conference also was Leon Wiles answering questions about the fact that, you know, the U.S. was really just trying to, like, make the search for Kyoko that much worse. And the fact that Yoko could stay here and John couldn't, and really making the case that there's really no reason that John shouldn't be able to be a permanent resident of the U.S. And the U.S. was really just kind of like splitting hairs at this point. Ultimately, John would get his green card in 1976, which, you know, that's a long time to wait. It's a long time to keep pushing off, you know, of being deported. But his deportation order would eventually be reversed officially on October 7th, 1975. So happy birthday, John. You're not going to get deported.
Right, right.
Anymore.
I'm sure he's thrilled about that.
Yes, exactly. Good birthday gift, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amazingly, Newtopia was John and Yoko's last act of political protest. They did so many from 1969 up until 1973. And then it really just kind of stopped, which it makes sense. They moved into Dakota. Then there was the
they had
lost
some other
weekend.
Stuff going on.
Yeah, they had a lot of personal stuff going on. As soon as John got back to New York, Yoko got pregnant with Sean.
And he house husbanded it. And Yoko was doing the business. And like any busy parents, I think they shifted their focus to other things.
Newtopia lives on today. Newtopia was resurrected just 2 weeks ago. On April 2nd, which, depending on which day you believe Newtopia was formed, it was either April 1st or April 2nd. So it was on an anniversary or an almost anniversary of the founding of the country. And so on that day, some posts appeared on John Lennon's social media accounts announcing a new version of Newtopia, a link to the website, A Newtopia for the Internet Age, to citizenofnewtopia.com.
Mm.
Other posts showed videos of their 1973 declaration with more information about its origins. If you go to citizenofnewtopia.com, which we both have, people can fill out their own declaration of Newtopian citizenship. It asks for your name, your country, and an optional message to your fellow citizens, allowing you to declare yourself a citizen by acknowledging your awareness of the conceptual country, just as the requirement was in 1973. It also asks you if you want to join a mailing list from Universal about John Lennon.
There we go. There's the marketing.
Yep. Which actually that brought me up short just a little bit, because usually Yoko's projects don't have that commercial aspect to them. So it's like, oh, okay. But of course, yeah, I will. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to do it.
No, not at all. So once you fill out the form, you get an email from Immigration. Like, that's the name of the sender of the email. And I have no immigration issues, but even I saw that. I was like, oh, immigration, what?
I know. Can you imagine? Yeah, if you're like having your own John Lennon level battle with immigration to get an email like that.
But it was totally benign. The email from immigration is your Citizen of Newtopia ID card, which we'll have to post online.
Yes.
Once you're logged in, you can see how many citizens of Newtopia there are. I think right now it's somewhere over 6,000. And it's a interactive map where if you click on the dot in the country, you can see what the messages are from your fellow citizens. This website is not to be confused with a similar one with a similar name called newtopia.org. This is something else. This has nothing to do with John Lennon. It was started 2016. It seems like a push to unite people under a framework of a similar, like a socialist, communist, utopian paradise, but with the addition of 24/7 CCTV and every activity of yours tracked by a central computer database.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was really uncomfortable. Like, they had a lot of the same underlying principles of Imagine, even some of the direct words like no religion, things like that, but takes it to a whole other level, trying to construct an actual society with some serious Big Brother undertones.
That's pretty scary. Yeah, nope. definitely not utopian.
No. Looks like the activity around this website stopped around 2018, but it's still out there. That is not the John and Yoko piece at all.
Don't do it. Don't go there.
As we have talked about already, this is more than just a conceptual performance art piece. It ties in with the promotion for the 50th anniversary release of John Lennon's Mind Games. The album and the time period, of course, that Newtopia is most closely associated with. The album itself is remixed. The deluxe collection will contain 72 total tracks, which is really, that's huge for a solo album.
For Mind Games. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of excited to see what this is all about. It's coming in July, but a limited edition Mind Games vinyl EP will be released as part of the 2024 Record Store Day celebration this coming Saturday, April 20th, 4:20.
Blaze it.
Right? Yep. John will be happy.
I guess.
Only in independent record stores. I didn't know that was a thing for Record Store Day, but that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, I got to admit, it kind of gave me the ick a little bit to see such a capitalist marketing motive behind it, but it's fine. I mean, it's an interesting idea. I think it does make you think a little bit. And, you know, hey, I want to listen to the release of Mind Games. So cool.
You know, I am going to go ahead and disagree with you, actually, because I think it's very cool. I think maybe this is because I work in music as well. So it's like, I get it. But I do think it's cool to resurrect this sort of niche idea. As we talked about in the top of the show, it's like, I wonder how many maybe newer fans are familiar with Newtopia. So this is kind of introducing it to people who might not have realized what it is, or if they knew what it was, maybe not the principal tenets that John Lennon sort of established about it. So I don't know. And I think the website is very cool. I love an interactive moment. And I don't know, I thought it was really well thought out, even if it does tie back to the box set or the Record Store Day release. I kind of dig it. I'm here for it.
All right, cool. No, I like Newtopia as a concept. I like the website. I was just a little bit like, okay, they're asking me if I want information.
Yeah.
About, you know, whatever. But you don't even have to get it. You can still be a citizen of Utopia and don't even have to check that box. So it's fine.
You don't even have to have access to the internet. You don't have to do anything. You just have to be aware of Newtopia and guess
what? Acknowledge it.
You're a citizen. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Congratulations, fellow citizens who are listening to this podcast. You're now aware.
Yes, exactly. And I have a box of the flags on my nightstand. So I'm really, really a hardcore patriot. I'm going to set up like a stand on the side of a highway and sell Newtopian flags.
I love it. What are you going to sell them for? How much?
That's a really good question. I mean, Newtopia has to have some sort of currency, right?
Is it conceptual currency?
A conceptual currency, yes.
I'll pay you an imaginary £5 if I can hammer in an imaginary nail.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's Newtopian currency right there at its finest.
And it all started at the bag of nails in John and Yoko's first meeting.
Yes, exactly. And Yoko's art, because Yoko is the seed of everything, as we've talked about.
Yes. And don't you forget it.
Don't you forget it. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed going down this road to Newtopia with us and learning a little bit about John's immigration struggles. So crazy. Newtopia was such a fun clapback from them, and it's still being celebrated. And we will keep you posted if we go to that restaurant, because that would be hysterical.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. So in the meantime, thank you again for listening to BC the Beatles. As always, subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening right now. And please give us a rating/review so other Beatle maniacs can find us.
And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter/X, and TikTok. We'll be posting photos and more from this episode and beyond. If you become a citizen of Newtopia, send us your ID card. We'll put it in stories.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. And remember, you can always email us at bcthebeatles@gmail.com. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.